kids, I'm going to tell you a story.
Let's all gather around our creepy Uncle Bob.
So a long time ago, and I won't say how long ago it was, but I walked in a record store in a new place that I lived. It was in Bethesda, Maryland. And the entire record store was set up so that it was arranged by label and number. I mean, that's the entire layout of the store. So if you wanted a record by Pink Floyd, you'd have to know that Pink Floyd were on, you know, Harvest Records.
Seriously. So even a 13-year-old kid off the street wanted to come in and buy a rock album, he had to know what label it was on.
Or they ask the clerk, do you have the new...
That's insane.
No, wait. Back up one step further. Yes. There used to be stores in which people bought music.
Seriously, right?
I'm here now with Robin Hilton in the studio, producer of All Songs Considered, and Stephen Thompson, who is the editor for the NPR Music site, and of course, curates Song of the Day. And Carrie Brownstein, you're in Portland. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Bob.
Hello.
And Carrie writes Monitor Mix, a great blog. And it got me thinking about all of us, the four of us, know record labels well. We get lots of records in. We know the places they come from. But if I do a search in my iTunes library of my number of songs and I search, you know, a record label name, Kill Rock Stars, nothing will come up. And so I was thinking about what record labels mean, what the future is, and that's the place to start. So I'm wondering, Carrie, where you grew up, whether or not labels meant something to you, and were there record labels where you live in Washington and what, Redmond?
There were. In fact, growing up, I think I was equally aware of record labels as I was of the bands that were on those labels. In Seattle, we had CZ, Pop Llama, Up, Sub Pop, if I haven't already said that. In Bellingham, north of Seattle, we had Estrus. We had Kill Rock Stars and K in Olympia. We had Candy Ass down in Portland, and I was able to shop pretty much by label. That's how I discovered new bands. I could count on Sub Pop putting out a singles collection. I could count on K Records putting out a certain kind of music that I wanted, and that really informed my musical taste. And I think that anyone growing up at that time, which was in the 90s, but also people coming before me in the 80s, there was a total marriage of bands and labels. So one label I'd like to play a cut from is Kill Rock Stars. This is Bikini Kill, New Radio.
So what did you expect when you picked up a Kill Rock Stars record?
I think actually Kill Rock Stars was one of the first labels that, especially in the Seattle and Northwest area, where you wouldn't know what to expect. I mean, I think that they had certain sort of subcategories. I mean, aside from Bikini Kill, there was Bratmobile and Heavens to Betsy. But then Slim Moon, the founder, was also one of the first champions of folk music and singer-songwriters well before anyone else
of this wave of folk music.
Yeah, I mean, of this current, sorry, not right. The 60s and 70s folk music, but, you know, or in the early 90s when most people were putting out much harder, edgier music, especially in the independent label community, he was putting out Elliot Smith, Daniel Howell, Laura Veers, Mary Lou Lord. And he also, Slim, had a impeccable acumen for picking bands that would later go on to be huge. Again, Elliott Smith, The Decemberists, The Gossip. He put out a spoken word album by Miranda July, who's a filmmaker. So I think they were all over the map. And that's what was always really impressive and still is impressive about this label.
Yeah, this was one of the first labels that I noticed. Because this stuff, I mean, the label started right as I was starting to be a college radio music director. And
Early 90s.
And that song, that Bikini Kill song, sounds very much like college radio to me and what I sort of associate with college radio. It's such a great song, great band.
Robin, you have a label from the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah, you know, as Carrie was saying, there's absolutely no shortage of amazing labels from the Pacific Northwest. And one of my favorite is one that I feel like I do know what I'm going to get each time. Barsuk is the label. Barsuk put out some of the first few Death Cab for Cutie records before they jumped to the major label. Mates of State, Not a Surf, Rah Rah Riot, John Vanderslice are all Barsuk artists.
Recently we had the Starlight Mints on the show.
Yeah, Starlight Mints, love that band. And what I feel like with this label, we get so much mail in and so many CDs in, and this is one, when I see the Barsuk logo on it, I set it aside because I know I'm probably going to love what's in there. And their logo is this little cartoon dog holding a record like a Frisbee. Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot about their aesthetic, which is there's a real sweetness and a playfulness to a lot of their artists. And one of those is a guy named Jim Noir. He's a singer-songwriter from Manchester, England. He put out an album, a self-titled album last year that I want to hear a cut from. It's called Don't You Worry. Sort of a trippy, sort of psych pop singer-songwriter. A lot of their artists have that. I think Starlight Mints kind of have that too. Sort of neo-psychedelica that I really like.
There is something about the philosophy of a label for me that back in the store that I try to describe, and one of the labels I remember always looking at to see if there was anything new by a label was Harvest Records. And Harvest was a label back in they started, I think, the late 60s, 69. Pink Floyd records were coming out on Harvest. And they had this nice sort of psychedelic feel to them. And one of the things about looking in those bins of those record stores was the ability to know that there'd be some commonality in that bin. It was the one sort of connection. Like now you can make all those sorts of connections with, you know, you think of anything like Pandora or any of those things where they'd make the connections for you. But if you went into a normal department store that sold records or just a normal record store and it was all by alphabet, there was no connection. So it was kind of, in a cool way, an interesting way of discovering music back then. And one band that I fell in love with was a group called The Move, who people know now maybe because of Jeff Lynne, who is Electric Light Orchestra Jeff Lynne, and, you know, producer for George Harrison Jeff Lynne, and, you know, Chaplin Wilbury is Jeff Lynne, but
and the new Regina Spektor album producer.
That's right,
Jeff Lynne,
which is on a which is on Sire Records, which is another label I'd like to talk about. But the Move were doing stuff, and you'd never know. They didn't get any radio airplay in the U.S. They were a big band in England, especially in pop music. But I picked up this record called Message from the Country, and never quite heard anything like this in my life, and it's beautiful. It's hard for me to make this song stop, but I will.
I was just listening to that and thinking about you being a kid and hearing this for the first time, and just thinking, I've always been so jealous of people who sort of came of age back then and, you know, and could hear records like this. Seriously.
But the thing is,
we had to crank them too, you know?
The thing is, if you were around, you'd have to be as old as Bob is now.
Oh, that's true. Forget it. It's not worth it.
Totally not worth it. We'll put up a blog post, and the blog post will be something to the effect of, do labels matter to you? If labels matter to you, what labels matter to you? What do you trust? What do you look for in a record label? What's let you down in a record label you may have trusted? You know, who's taken the bad turns and the good turns? Because certainly, you know, even labels like Harvest, and even there are plenty of labels who had this golden thing that they, Elektra you mentioned before, who had this thing that, you know, there was a curator for the label or a philosophy in the label, and in the blink of an eye, because they got bought up or something else, or just the person left.
Or they fired the A&R guy.
There you go. The one person who was the genius. Which goes to another point that I'll make before I give Stephen a chance to talk about his label, which is that oftentimes we think of labels these days as the small independent label. One of the reasons I picked Harvest Records, which was owned by EMI, is to point out that it used to be that big labels actually were really, there were great things about big labels, and it's easy to poo-poo big labels, but Harvest Records was a fantastic thing. You think of Reprise Records, which is a label Frank Sinatra started, an artist-run record label, basically. It was, you know, the artist had the freedom. That was Frank Sinatra's philosophy, and then you wind up with Hendrix, you wind up with Neil Young, you wind up with the Kinks.
So Carrie talked about Kill Rock Stars, and Robin talked about Barsook, and I'm going to talk about another Seattle label, and it occurred to me...
Something in the water there.
I know. It occurred to me that Carrie was in an unbelievably unfair... She had an unbelievably unfair advantage. It must be in the water, being surrounded by those scenes. The fact that I'm sure there were kids in your high school, even though I know you grew up in sort of a suburban environment, you still had that music in the air there. Am I right?
Of course.
Yeah. And there were...
I agree. I'm better.
Amazing. Yeah, exactly.
So she had Seattle, and I had age. And what do you have?
I had Central Wisconsin.
You had your hair. You have your hair still.
I had an extraordinary amount of hair, which, you know, which is its own advantage. But in Central Wisconsin, there were fewer labels that we would talk about on a show like this.
The show would be over, actually.
Which is its own reward. Bob and Robin, you know that I've been in the process of cleaning out a storage unit.
And the worst CDs you've ever seen pile up whenever he comes home from Wisconsin.
Now I've been, before I was at NPR, I've been at NPR for 3 years. And before I was at NPR, I spent 12 years at The Onion and 4 years as a college radio music director. And during that time, I amassed an enormous quantity of music.
Incredible background.
It's tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands. Tens of thousands.
Never a clearer sign of some sort of disorder.
This is my garbage
he has carried with him from state to state.
This is my my personality disorders in action. I had a garage and it had a giant storage area, and I just threw everything that came in. Either, you know, if it didn't go in my basement and on shelves, it went in boxes in the garage. And now all of those boxes are in my in-laws, my long-suffering in-laws' basement.
Slowly dribbling their way into NPR to be given away that no one wants them. They come and look through the tubs of stuff that Stephen brings
in. And so I'll bring in thousands at a time and send out notes to the company like, if you like music but wish that more of it was worthless garbage, you know, come take a look. And of course, at first, like, a lot of it was waterlogged. So if you wanted, you know, oh boy, a waterlogged MC Hammer CD, you know, it has its charm. Anyway, going through these...
Anyway, I like Ham. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Now that reminds me of a long-winded story.
You're already in the middle of one.
I'm going to be following breadcrumb trails back to what I was originally saying. Anyway, going through these thousands of CDs, I would say, you know, because I still have this personality disorder, I didn't want to just truck everything to the office. Some of it's good. There are certain... You guys are making faces. Stop it, you jerks.
Okay.
I'm making faces too, by the way.
I know you are. You're not in the room, but I know it. I know you are. I know you, Brownstein. So
feel my face.
So one thing that I found is there were certain labels. Even if I didn't remember the artist, didn't remember whether I liked the CD or not, if it was on a certain label, it would not go in the freebie pile. And one of the labels that I discovered that with was Sub Pop. As I got to thinking about Sub Pop, and Sub Pop's website has a handy list of every artist that's ever put out a record on that label, and you look it over, and you look over all these CDs that I've saved, there is not one defining sound at all. And Carrie was touching on this about Kill Rock Stars before. There's a philosophy to that label, but there's not a genre. So it was definitely one of the first labels that I fell in love with, and the song that I picked is a band called The Spinanes. Bob, why don't you go ahead and play Noel, Jonah, and Me. Record, just two people. So, Carrie, I actually have a question for you. You've actually recorded an album for Sub Pop.
Yes.
And I know we don't usually talk about what a giant, huge rock star Kerry Brownstein is. I don't mean to put you on the spot and talk. We don't have to talk about your specific greatness. But
oh my God, what are you doing to me right now?
Roll tape.
But no, I guess my question for you.
Do you want to form a two-piece band with me? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I have no...
I think it's time we start talking about forming a band.
You'll have to do... You'll
again,
have to,
we talk about this at every show.
You'll have to do the music and I'll do the yelling. One of the things that's interesting to me about Sub Pop is that not everything Sub Pop puts out is great, but over the years, they've never had a point in which I wasn't interested in any of their records. Is there one dominant personality within that label that is the reason for that?
I think... for sure that Jonathan Poneman is still at the helm of Sub Pop with a vision, with an unabashed love of music. Megan Jasper has also been there forever. Tony Kuehl, Chris Jacobs, there's so many great people there. I think that they do inspire loyalty, but at the same time, it's just people that have... sort of a sixth sense for talent, for bands, for energy and passion. And I don't think that there's, you know, anything more than just, I mean, they really are talented people and they are really good at finding artists and taking risks before other people, you know, decide that something is worthwhile. But certainly Jonathan's been around and he is just as excited about music as he was, you know, 25 years ago.
Maybe we should explain a little bit about how a label gets its philosophy and how a label finds bands, because in the big label world, they hired people. They call them A&R guys, which is artists and repertoire. And they would go to clubs and theaters or wherever and feel the buzz, you know, and find the acts that were the talent. And those were often the people that were the, you know, the driving force behind the philosophy, quote unquote, of a label. Since Stephen brings it up, in your case, Kerry, did somebody come to you from a label who saw you? And how did it work for your band, for Slater-Kinney?
We started in Olympia, and as we've already talked about, Olympia was chock full of a handful of labels. But we did end up actually approaching Slim Moon at the time and asking if he wanted to put out our record, and he said no at first because
you guys were terrible.
Because we were terrible, and he thought we were just a side project. A lot of labels are interested, and touring is the way bands make money and the way that you promote a record, so that's pretty common. He did eventually say yes. They do have an A&R. Even every small label I've worked with has people that go to shows that kind of champion a band and bring that band into the company and kind of sell it to everyone. And usually small labels, there's a lot of people that are in charge of picking the bands, not just one person. There's usually kind of a handful of people that need to sign off on something like that. And I know at Sub Pop, there's a bunch of different people in actually different departments that bring in bands and then kind of run it by a advisory committee. Because I think that one person can't go to every single show and know about every band. But
hell of a job, though.
Real fun job. But I do think that A&R still exists, even at small labels, even if it's just the one guy or girl going out there. I mean, there is that process. Very few bands get signed from, you know, forwarding their MySpace page or sending in a... you know, sending tracks over the internet.
Do you have another piece of music for us, Kerry?
I do. This is a label, you know, Stephen and Robin were both talking about, you know, labels that they've come to rely on for quality music. And this is a label that I've talked about before on this show. But it's Jag Jaguar, which is based out of Bloomington, Indiana. They're actually part of kind of a triumvirate of excellent labels, Secretly Canadian, Dead Oceans, and then Jag Jaguar. And if I had to just pick a label, if someone... did one of those stupid games where they said you can only listen to one current label's roster, I might pick this label just because they cover such a wide swath of music. So yeah, this,
why don't you
this
maybe ma- rattle off a couple of them, so for those who don't associate labels and artists. I mean, Bon Iver is probably the most popular for our
Bon Iver, we've all fallen in love with Bon Iver. I just wanted to mention him.
I didn't want to go down the road.
Let's talk about Bon Iver.
Gosh, let's spend another 15 minutes. No, it's true.
They have
okay, women, I think, right?
Women, who I like, it's the band Women, Wilderness.
I'm glad you clarified.
Jesus.
I just left it wide open.
Women, who we just all love so much, and Ockerville River, Parts and Labor, out in Secretly Canadian, they have Anthony and the Johnsons. Sunset Rubdown, who just put out a great record. Yeah. They just put out the new Dinosaur Jr. record.
You didn't mention the record.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't.
I got to get another job. This is killing me.
But this band that I would like to play a track from is called Lightning Dust. And they're
great.
They are part of its two members, Amber Weber and Josh Wells from Black Mountain, who are also on Jag Jaguar. And there's also Pink Mountain Tops. And I actually do love how some of these labels just put out every project by artists. And I think it's kind of exciting and keeps things sort of insular and energetic. Lightning Dust have an album coming out, Infinite Light. And this is
which I know you heard last week on the show that we featured them, right?
You did.
We did.
Why?
What song did you guys play?
Take It Home was the song I played.
Oh, okay, good. Obviously we all love this record. I feel like this is going to be one of my favorite records of the year. I just can't believe how good it is. It's from the upcoming album Infinite Light, and the song is called Antonia Jane.
Did you ever come close to home, riding the tide of the silver line? Up in ribbon and gold, never fall back into the one you love. Pickpocket lady with her mind on you, she'll break a million hearts until she makes it through. But I declare war on you someday soon. Skies, lay down ditches on the side of the road. Be careful, you don't move too slow. Lazy headliners, you'll get fed to the wolves. So rally up the soldiers, there's a war to win. If hearts can't be aligned, then I can't let them.
You know, we don't often like to repeat stuff on the show too much, at least certainly not within a few weeks.
Except for Bon Iver, but
this is just a wonderful record. You're right. This is Infinite Light. This is the artist of Lightning Dust, and it's beautiful.
How do you think it compares to their first one that came out a year or two ago? I really love that one.
I like this one better. I just think this has a few more standout songs. This is the record I've been listening to for weeks now. Love it.
I'm going to listen to this on my road trip.
Very nice.
Yeah, you should. Buckingham Nicks. Then you should listen to Buckingham Nicks right afterwards.
Oh, don't do that.
Oh, sorry.
I can't even think of that record without thinking of that cover is my problem. But Robin Hilton, when you think of identities for a label, a true identity, there is no label that has a stronger identity than the label you've picked.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. It's a label called ECM. It's based in Munich, Germany, and actually it's been around quite a while. It was founded, this is its 40th anniversary. It started in 1969. And ECM is another one of those labels, like you said, I know what I'm going to get when I see one of their records comes in. All of their records have a distinctive look, right?
Totally, the
covers, you know, just from the cover.
Landscapes, and they're
on a black background and just the letters ECM. Very classy. They're thought of as a jazz and classical and world music label. Those are the easy ways to describe it. But really, it's so much more than that. And they really blend all three of those worlds, I think, really beautifully with always interesting and inspired results.
Real high quality recordings.
Very, very high fidelity and
in the old days,
recorded.
When I talk about the records, you know, the cranking things. But in record stores, they were the ones that had the plastic sleeves inside the paper.
Oh, so you knew you were going... top drawer with those. If I could say that Barsuk always has a sort of warmth and playfulness and innocence to it. I would say ECM, there's this always this real warmth to their records.
Expanse. I don't know why the word expanse comes to
That's
mind.
A good word, too. I don't know. I've got a couple groups here from them, and they have a huge roster. But I've got the Tord Gustafsson Trio and the Hilliard Ensemble. Would you rather hear a little more, something a little more jazzy or something a little more classic?
You want a little Tord or a little Hilliard?
Boy, I sure love both of them a lot.
I do too. So let's listen to the Tord Gustafsson Trio. This is a song called Melted Matter from an album that came out about 6 years ago. It's called Changing Places. Great. Talk about the how well it's recorded. You can hear every little creak, the little dampers on the piano, the nice little ring to the snare when he hits it. It's just gorgeous.
It really is something special. And that's the vision of Manfred Eicher, who's the guy who founded ECM, and has held that vision. I mean, it was one thing for, you know, the first year of seeing these releases come out in the record store to see these gorgeous photographs and very simple thing. But to still be doing it 40 years later.
Yeah.
And still, I find myself excited by a lot of the releases they put out. Mm-hmm. It's really a fairly genius thing. And about the same time as Manfred Eicher was doing his ECM stuff, Seymour Stein was getting a record label together called Sire Records. And Sire Records, for me, took a couple of different turns. We talk about labels changing and doing different things. I mean, they had the Climax Blues Band and nothing terribly exciting at their beginning. Then they started putting out these History of British Rock records, which were nice collections. And then they made some of their money with this record, which was, I'll play it until somebody yells out the name of it, except for Robin.
Yeah, I know what it is right now.
Maybe if I skip into this part here, right here. Nobody?
Sparks?
Oh, no, it's not Sparks.
It's a great guess, though.
I thought for sure.
All right, here's a hint, best yodel rock you'll ever hear.
So this is a Dutch band called Focus, Hocus Pocus was the name of the song, and it was a big hit in the early 70s, but it's okay if you didn't know it.
I only know because there's a really bonkers video for this, of them performing that song live
that
I saw on YouTube.
It did sound a lot like Sparks.
But that aside, it was just, they came out and started taking this idea of early British rock music and signed a group called the Flaming Groovies, who put out one of the best, you know, power pop records of the middle 70s.
My telephone ring is Shake Some Action.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, that's just great. So if I play this song, you're going to go
I'm going to get my phone.
This is just one of the brilliant songs.
That's how connected we are.
What a beginning of a song. Telephone!
To get to you someday. Ooh.
What a great band.
Fantastic.
Do you guys want to hear that from my iPhone now?
Do I?
We could do a whole iPhone commercial.
You know, it's funny, as an aside, I was doing a little bit of research on the band The Locust. And they've got all these ridiculous song titles, and I was poking around online, and I found a website with their lyrics, and this pop-up window came up, and they have a song called "Gluing Carpet to Your Genitals Does Not Make You a Cantaloupe," and this pop-up window came up. It said, "Send gluing carpet to your genitals does not make you a cantaloupe ringtone to yourself." And I just thought, you know, I've never done that. I actually don't have a song ringtone, but if I did, that's exactly what I would do.
You should have talked about The Locust right after Bob talked about Focus Hocus Pocus.
Oh,
we got a theme going.
Hey, Bob, did Flamin' Groovies have any other hits?
They had other great songs. I'm not sure that they had any other hits. But it wasn't a far stretch in Seymour Stein's eyes and in the ears of all that started to listen to the music that Sire started to put out, especially when Sire Records was sort of independent, so to speak, and then Warner Brothers, the big company, gobbled them, or he signed to him, I don't know which, but anyway, it was all now one part. Sire was part of Warner Brothers, and when that happened, a whole bunch of bands started getting signed. Seymour Stein was based in Brooklyn, and then you could wind up hearing a song like this, which isn't a far stretch from the Flaming Groovies in some ways, which
got sped up.
Beat on the brat, beat on the brat, beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Beat on the brat, beat on the brat, beat on the brat with a baseball bat. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh ho.
Take that, Manfred Eicher. Right?
Yeah, Sire put out like the first cool records I was ever exposed to. I still have a cool older sister, and the Ramones and the Rosillos were both Sire, and the Pork Dukes, but they weren't on Sire.
The Pretenders were on Sire.
Yeah, the Pork Dukes weren't, though.
No, they were not.
I remember my mom humming Pork Dukes' "Makin' Bacon" in the supermarket.
Yeah, I had that single.
Can I just say, I'm really curious, as people listen to the show, what if there's an age gap between people that know about labels and people that don't? Because I have been in a car with friends and said, oh, yeah, you know this band. They were on this label. And they just stare at me like, what are you talking about? What label? And why does that matter?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to get too meta about this, but I do wonder, you know, I mean, we're having this whole show about it, but I've always wondered, do people find labels interesting? Do readers of rock writing care about labels? I always, as an editor, I've always sort of taken it out. I've always, I always think writers are interested in labels because that's who's sending them the music, but the public doesn't care. They care about the bands.
Do people go to record label websites? Do, you know, that kind of stuff?
They should, because it is a great way to discover new music. If you find a label that's philosophically aligned with you, they're usually streaming great music. I mean, I know the Sub Pop site and the Jag Jaguar site, you can stream or and download a lot of free music.
Matador, Merge do that.
Absolutely.
Barsuk does that.
So anyway, Sire was so instrumental in the whole, New York scene. I mean, television, the band went to Elektra, but there are so many ties with a label and a movement. Can we think of...
It seems nowadays you really only hear about labels or think about, you know, it's usually the large labels, and usually in some sort of negative light. or when a band jumps from a smaller label to a major label, like the Decemberists going from Kill Rock Stars to Capitol, and Death Cab from Barsuk to Atlantic, and that was just somehow considered, you know.
Well, it always raised these questions. Now are they different?
Yeah.
Well, and the very early example of that is REM going from IRS to Warner Brothers.
To Warner and getting the record-breaking deal. Yeah. I mean,
I think we all, at least many of us back then, certainly thought of it as selling out, and I think a lot of people, well, I don't know. I mean, do people think of it anymore
I think the knee-jerk reaction is to assume that it's some sort of a sellout, but I think when you look at the two bands I just mentioned, Death Cab and Decemberists, that their music is just as great or better now than it was when they were on the smaller labels.
Although we'll get some email about that.
I think the bar has been moved for what constitutes selling out. I mean, the bar has been moved in terms of how do you make a living in music? I don't think people care nearly as much. I mean, it used to be if your song was used in a commercial, just absolutely shocking. Like, oh my God, I can't believe they did that.
Huge.
And now it's like, wow, they must have made rent from April to June doing that. Yeah. You know, so you know, I don't know. I sort of feel like the whole debate has shifted on that in that way.
Let's get to more music.
No, I'd actually like to hear myself talk more.
I'm going to go get a bite. And
I am too. I'm starving.
We've done two because we've done one from Steven.
Yeah,
I think Steven needs to take a second.
We did one from Steven, two from me, two from Carrie, and three from Bob. Does that math seem about right? Chris. One for Steven and three for Bob?
That seems about
That's
right.
That's perfect.
Three for Bob.
No one's
the
arguing.
Formula.
So what we'll do is we'll put up a blog post. Obviously, there are a gazillion labels we left. Someone points out that we left out, you know, the place where we're in Washington, D.C., at least three of us are. And Discord Records was so important to a music scene here. There's so many labels maybe important to a music scene where you live. That's what we want you to do on the blog. We'll put up a blog post. You can tell us about the labels that are meaningful to you, meaningful to your community, ones that you can absolutely trust, ones that have fallen down on their faces and used to be able to trust. And Carrie, you'll put up a blog post about record labels too. And we'll try to get the conversation going and it being a way to find out about new music in the end, because that's what I think of these things as. That's what I think about record labels as a connect-the-dot sort of thing. And Stephen, why don't you take us out? Stephen Thompson. I'm here with Stephen Thompson, Robin Hilton, and Carrie Brownstein. Thanks, all. Stephen, take us out on something.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about what's become a really interesting label, Anti. If you guys remember, in the 90s, there was a label called CMC International, and they just started plucking up all of these sort of washed-up hair metal bands. And so they put out, like, a Vixen record, but they also signed, like, Yes. And all these, you know, what were widely at the time considered just total dinosaur county fair bands. And they ended up building it into a what was in its own way an interesting label. And I don't mean, I know it sounds odd to go from CMC International to Anti, but I feel like Anti has become like the CMC International of awesomeness, where bands that had really long fruitful runs on major labels have kind of eventually hit a point where they've settled into a place in their career where now they're on Anti. Tom Waits is on Anti now.
Jason Lytle is on Anti.
We almost went through a whole show without mentioning Jason Lytle.
Jason Lytle from Grant. Who
is he? Oh, you know, he has a new solo album out right now.
Really?
That's really fantastic.
Robin, I heard you got his face tattooed over yours.
No, I didn't, but I like the idea. And then I'd look in the mirror every night and say, Jason.
Hey, buddy. Anyway,
let's go get something to eat.
Anti Records. Merle Haggard is on Anti. Nick Cave.
Tom Waits.
That a few words.
He was too busy thinking about Jason Lytle. it's sort of interesting. But they also have all these world music titles. They put out Antibalas, and they just signed Os Mutantes. Mm-hmm. I've come to find them to be a very trustworthy source of music. And so the song I'm gonna play is by a wonderful band I know Robin and I both really love, called The Weaker Thans.
Oh yeah.
And this is a song they're Canadian, and this particular song is among their most Canadian songs, referencing curling and all that. This is called I love this song so much. It's called Tournament of Hearts.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bob.
Now the lounge is full of farmers. 7:30 draw. Teammates all left before they had to buy a round. When they pull the 50-50 and I've lost again, I'll go. Maybe have one more brown, one for the snowy road. All the championship.
how many comments in until somebody says that Facebook is their favorite label? On this program.
Gross. Wow. Remember when, like, was it Spin Magazine? MySpace. did its best albums of the year, and their number one was like Your Computer. So lame. Or maybe it was Napster. Oh, so weak.
Is that like when Time Magazine said that the person of the year was you?
Oh, yeah. Person of the year is not me.
Well, that's what I thought. I was like, well, it's not Stephen Thompson, but it might be me.
Wait a minute. If it's me, then it means it's him. And if it's him,
you just broke my brain.
And if you're wearing a tattoo on your face of somebody else, then what does it really mean?
Jason Lytle's face tattoo.
God, I haven't got you a wedding gift yet.